Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
I'm Arun D'Souza, the Chief Information Security and Privacy Officer, CISO and CPO in common parlance at Nexty Automotive Corporation. Here I pioneered an integrated global InfoSec and privacy program, developed a long-range strategic roadmap linked to business objectives, and built a strong team from the ground up. I am responsible for wide variety of services, including but not limited to strategic planning, identity and access management, incident management, privacy management, risk management, governance and standards, security operations, and training and awareness.
That's great, Arun. Thanks so much for being with us today on the Ivy Podcast. Tell us a little bit about your background. Where do you come from prior to this? You have a very extensive, you know, technology background. I'm curious to tell us a little bit more about that.
Yes, absolutely. This is not my first CISO gig. I actually I've been a CISO at Nexty Automotive preceding that at Energy Automotive Systems since 2003 to 2012. And those were the days when, you know, security was desirable, but it wasn't as topical and timely as it is now. So I have a long background as CISO, but also I've got about, over 20 years of experience, IT executive management in a variety of areas, but it's exclusively almost in global roles. Spanning Americas, Asia, Europe. So I'm very strong in collaboration, communication, and working in multicultural milieus. Also, I've been fortunate to win a multiple industry awards, couple being the first Global Cyber Observatory inducted me in the Hall of Fame for CISOs last year, and then also the Premier 100 IT Leaders Award a few years ago from Computer World. So I've got a pretty eclectic, diverse background. And, you know, if you ask me, the one thing that makes me tick is I like working with people across all areas of the company, but also across the enterprise ecosystem with vendors and partners as well.
Well, that's exciting. And congratulations on all of your accomplishments. To shift gears a little bit, I want to talk to you about advanced technologies such as artificial intelligence, machine learning, RPA, and so forth, which are reinventing, you know, information technology as a whole. For you as an information security thought leader, how do you think these trends will impact your industry from innovation standpoint? And what are your thoughts on the best strategies to adopt such technologies securely? Because I talk to a lot of executives almost, you know, on a daily basis. And, you know, yes, these are buzzwords. These words are everywhere, but they've been around for quite some time, just been labeled differently. It's great to talk about this, but implementing such technology is a completely different game. Curious to get your take on that, especially from that security standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. So just a little sidebar, AI, ML, RPA, are for me three of the many charter technologies of what's today called the fourth industrial revolution or industry 4.0. There's others, of course, like cloud computing and mobile technologies and whatnot. And together, all these technologies really make this time in IT and security very, very fascinating for both professionals and the business as well, because they're all game changers in their own way. And of course, we're still awaiting quantum computing. Now, that being said, AI, ML, and RPA, first, from a manufacturing perspective, they can help enhance efficiency and productivity by re-engineering and automating business processes on the manufacturing floor. So for example, on the factory floor in support of digital manufacturing, they can help reduce cycle time and deliver predictive analytics to enhance equipment reliability. In the cybersecurity arena in particular, AI and ML can help strengthen cybersecurity defenses by adding a new embedded layer to the security architecture, right? Which can enact real-time adaptive control strategies. Now, at a macro level, Obviously, in any security program, we talk all the time about the three main dimensions: people, process, and technology, right? Well, let's start with technology. It's important to put in place a coalition of technologies that are able to close the risk footprint and actually drive the business forward at the same time, right? Enacting the balance between value protection and value creation, right? So, along with that, a layered security architecture is important. Training and awareness is huge, and so on, right? So, it's really, and business process re-engineering is also important. Having said that, I think the following guiding principles can help CISOs balance security and innovation resultant from AI, ML, RPA, and other game-changing technologies like the cloud. First, business partnership, right? It's important for the CISO to work with the CIO to proactively align priorities between IT, security, and also the business, and then assess the risk and implement appropriate administrative, physical, and technical safeguards, right? The second principle is convergence. Deploy a layered security architecture integrating data and applications. You've got to unify data management with identity and access management to foster innovation and protect security and privacy. Third, change management. Drive and manage change in concert with IT and business leaders to leverage synergy and avoid gaps in stakeholder expectation. Adopt a proactive approach to IT change to foster innovation while yet balancing security and privacy. And last, but not the least, strategic planning. And build a cybersecurity strategic plan with clear targets and strategic goals, supporting business objectives, and from time to time be able to show progress to plan with key metrics and even in executive dashboards. Does it resonate, John?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for, categorizing that in the different areas. It's a lot easier to comprehend from that standpoint. So that's very exciting. You mentioned a little bit, the different strategies and, initiatives to foster that culture of innovation. And when we take that a little bit further, I want to talk to you a little bit about the culture of federation. Tell us a little bit more about that concept and what strategies help you to foster such culture within your organization.
Yes, thank you, John. Federation is a subject very close to my heart, and let me explain how I came upon it, this principle. Many years ago, it was around 2003, 2004, when I was very new to the CISO role after a joint venture, I had the opportunity to actually lead a security and infrastructure global transformation, right? So it's a multi-year project. And what's interesting and fascinating about it, I worked really hard to put a business case in place and build out a nice presentation for the board up in Paris, France. And it was presented by, at the time, the VP of IT there. And he presented to the board, but times were tough. And they essentially said, you can do this whole project in 2 years. They're going to cut your budget in half. So from 2 million euros to 1 million euros. So you can imagine my plight. Here I am, like trying to sort of make my mark on the program, and my budget has been cut by half. And so I thought to myself, and then I went out across the vendor ecosystem, whether it was software, professional services, and so on, and had conversations with them and said, hey guys, I need your help. And to a man and to an organization, they all came forward and they cut their prices, in relation to providing some concessions for costing. I would do white papers or, case studies or even speak for them or take reference calls or whatever, right? And ironically, I was able to then finish that project in 2 years. It was a very successful project. It won the Network World Enterprise All-Star Award, as well as it was a Baseline Magazine case study, and so on. And what I realized from that experience was the fact federation is huge, because uniting for a common cause benefits everyone, and the synergies and the payoff are really huge. And that's when I came up with the term of federation. And I'll talk more about that for a minute, but does that make sense, the backdrop? Because I didn't want to just throw it out there as to what is Arun talking about, eh?
No, absolutely. It definitely does make sense. And it's, thanks for providing some examples, especially when your budget was cut and you had to think on the spot and try to figure out a strategy to adapt to that. I mean, that definitely can resonate with a lot of other executives in this space.
Yeah, absolutely. And so now moving on along that premise, federation has become one of the key principles by which I've, worked in my career across the enterprise ecosystem. And some of the guiding principles there are, first and foremost, focus on relationship management, one relationship at a time, one business department at a time, all across the globe. Because at the end of the day, you can have the best vision and the best strategy, but if you're not able to rally people to the vision and the cause, it's not going to be easy. And a way to sort of oil that particular engine of collaboration is to drive it with one-on-one relationship. It's made a big difference in my career, right? The next thing, of course, is the notion of air cover, right? One can design a comprehensive strategic plan with all kinds of technologies, a roadmap, and everything, but if you don't have the air cover of the business, it's going to be difficult to sell, right? So therefore, it's important to establish an information security and privacy council with business executives, because then they can take it, the common message and the goals agreed with you, to their organizations. And then when the CISO speaks to the departments or functional leaders, it's not the CISO speaking, but it's the business coalition, the management federation in this example, to speak, right? And then, of course, as time passes, as you build out the program, it's very important to build out a real federation and a network of cross-functional agents across IT and the business. And then one of the things we do here at NextEar is meeting bi-weekly to review key initiatives, progress to plan, and resolve issues with the federation, right? So this way, we're being very proactive and checking the state of the union, if you will, every 2 weeks, and then course correcting or adding new initiatives on the fly as needed. And last but not the least, it's very important for the CISO to serve as an ambassador and attend business departmental meetings to share priorities. And when one goes through all these different channels, one trait that I found very useful is a notion of storytelling, right? To influence people and try to get them to understand where you're coming from. Just kind of the example, I just started this particular tale on Federation. Thank you.
Oh, that's great. And thanks for those examples. You've mentioned a little bit about, the kind of the evolution of the role of the CISO, as part of kind of the whole culture of federation. And when we talk about that, it makes me think about from the overall CIO, CTO standpoint, anything that's technology related, those roles have definitely evolved in the last decade, being more, not so much of a order taker and a supportive role to an actual business partner. Tell us a little bit more about, with an emphasis on the CISO, how did that role evolve and what do you see as the role of the modern day CISO in the organization level?
Yeah, thank you, John. Yes, I started my CISO career in 2003. And in those days, I think the CISO worked as a pure technical CISO. And it's pretty much like, you're not seen, you were not heard, you took care of stuff, and that was that, right? But then that was 2003 to 2007, roughly. But I think 2007 timeframe, I think there came the era of the business aligned CISO. He started to work with the business and so on. And that has gone on for quite many years. But lately, the evolution of CISO has gone on towards a risk-focused CISO, where you're really thinking of enterprise risk, right, across all dimensions, actually partnering with the enterprise risk organization to make a difference, right? Because depending on the risk appetite and scale of digital transformation, various organizations, very important to pivot around risk. And the last evolution of the CISO is, I would say, the transformational CISO, right? Where you're even a peer of the CIO and the ability to drive change at a macro level. Now, the reality of it is, I talk about those four key areas, but you're never going to be able to specialize. You might be actually operating at all four channels at once because you've got to be able to drive change, manage risks, support the business, and yet drive your teams to enact technical change. But in my opinion, those are the four key pillars by which CISOs are measured today.
Right, absolutely. Couldn't agree more with you on that. And to elaborate on that further, tell us a little bit more from your perspective. What are the different, the leadership traits that every CISO, every successful CISO should have, based on kind of that evolution of that particular role?
In my opinion, I think out there today, the winds of change in business, like the fourth industrial revolution and privacy challenges, connected cars, and everything, are really allowing the CISO a tremendous opportunity, in my opinion, to lead change. So, therefore, the CISO is a change leader and a business leader has arrived to stay and will continue to stay, right? And almost going in the area of transformational leadership, all the time, every day, right? And in order to a CISO to be effective in this role as a business leader and a change agent, I would say that the following guiding principles are very important. Collaboration and communication, envisioning and storytelling, relationship management, program management, negotiation and vendor management, and last but not the least, strategic cost optimization. And that's huge, especially in this tough times with the COVID, et cetera, the ability to go out and, partner with your vendors, et cetera, to get costing concessions so as to be able to fund your program and protect your team and drive the business forward.
Right, absolutely. I especially like the last one that you've mentioned, strategic cost optimization. It's not necessarily that always comes to mind when we talk about, information security or technology in general, but that definitely made sense. So thanks for clarifying that. Aaron, from the I asked that all of my guests, and it's something that I'm very passionate about. The different trends and ideas in various industries. I'm very entrepreneurial in nature, so that's the question that I love. We can probably just talk for the rest of the podcast episode about this. But from your standpoint, what are the different ideas and trends that excite you the most these days? What do you think is the next big thing from your industry standpoint? What are you observing? What are you researching?
The winds of change are blowing to the world of work today, right? Macro trends such as Industry 4.0 and distributed work require that companies enact and accelerate digital transformation powered by the cloud. The cloud is almost like the hub and the whole enterprise on the spokes of the wheel, if you will, right? So along with the cloud, technologies such as artificial intelligence, machine learning, we talked about that earlier, robotic process automation, of course, but then blockchain, edge computing, the Internet of Things, autonomous vehicles, connected cars are all helping foster innovation and competitive advantage, right? So at the end of the day, what does this all mean? I see the convergence of the fields of information security, privacy, and enterprise risk, right? So these areas will converge, and I think in some cases, the CISO will either report to chief risk officer or be the chief risk officer along with these three fields, right? So that's coming for sure. So knowing that this convergence is coming either at an organizational level or at a federated level, this will establish identity as a cornerstone for secure delivery of digital applications and services, right? The notion of anytime, anywhere authorized access, because in order to drive the business forward, especially in this era of remote work, identity is huge. The notion of zero trust and software-defined perimeter to complement identity is very, very important as well, right? And the last thing that I think really fascinates me, John, and you may have heard of it, is the notion of self-sovereign identity. The ability for each individual to own and control their identity without the intervening administrative authorities. And this is also powered by blockchain. So there's so much going out there. And so all these technologies really sing out to me and I think can help companies make a big difference.
Right, absolutely. No, that's exciting. And, you know, those are definitely the trends that, you know, I'm seeing just as a general in IT or in technology in general. So that's, you know, that's super exciting. And we're all excited to see what's going to transpire, especially this year with, you know, 2020 behind us. And it's almost like the last year 2.0 that we get to relive that all over again. But with, you know, with the kind of with a different outlook onto things. So thanks for clarifying that. To shift gears a little bit, I want to talk to you about something that I'm very passionate about and something that we at our company, we specialize in, where we partner with organizations, you know, to help not only with very complex projects from, you know, software development or information technology consulting standpoint, but also to help find, you know, the very niche talent. Whether that's, you know, in cloud engineering or data science or information security. So from your standpoint, tell us about your strategies that really help you attract and retain the top talent in your field.
Sure. The first step is to build out a detailed services and competency framework with the skills needed for each role in the group. And also you have to include that in a strategic hiring plan, right? And this framework should of course be reviewed and periodically updated as your service delivery model increases and expands. It can also be used for career pathing and succession planning because skills are skills, but at the framework and the basis for evaluation is very, very important. Having said that, once you have that framework in place, then the following steps and strategies can be used to manage and develop talent. First, define an appropriate mix of in-house and outsourced services, right? One of the things I always say is if it's a core service, you know, keep it in-house. If it's a non-core service or the staff risk is very high, outsource it. An example being, you know, firewall management, right? It's a core service. However, you know, it's very hard to get talent for firewall. So maybe you can outsource that. Then, of course, with your own team, conduct cross-training across service tiers, right? Because you want to have each member of the team be able to support different services. We want generalists, not specialists, right? Utilizing managed services to the extent possible based on the budget and your ability for risk to absorb the provider services, right? And I can't speak enough about this. Leveraging training and development and succession plans, because every quarter, every month, you've got to look at your delivery profile and your skills framework to make sure where are the risks and make sure that you're covering them appropriately and you've got a pipeline in place of talent, right? We spoke about this earlier, the notion of strategic cost optimization, especially as when times are tough like now, it's very hard to fund new roles. So the ability to negotiate cost savings to self-fund key roles in technologies. I think this is something that has to be front and center of any strong privacy and security program, right? And then developing a, what I call a grassroots talent pipeline, you know, leveraging students and cooperative folks who can come in the summers or, you know, work for a semester, go back to school and groom them. You know, not everyone you invest in will join your company or maybe a good fit. This allows the opportunity to, you know, catch them early and grow them in their career. In fact, I've already done that a couple of times in my team, so I'm pretty familiar with that. And then identifying talent early and strengthening the pipeline, right? So for example, I'm on the board of the Cloud Security Alliance Detroit chapter. We have outreach towards universities and so on, and we try to invite students, you know, to our seminars and webinars. Of course, now it's webinars because of COVID, but especially when it's in person, some of the students that come, they interact with, you know, some of the executives there, and they're able to see some of these, you know, these kids that have an interest in security or cloud security and able to, you know, tap them and assist them, you know, in their career, even be mentors for them, right? And then building affiliations with industry groups and universities to identify interested talent. So I would say it's a multidimensional approach, John.
Oh, that's great. And it definitely makes sense, especially in the latter part where you talk about partnering with, with education providers than, in the colleges and universities, because these days it's, it's a war for talent, especially when we talk about information security, cybersecurity. And a lot of companies, a lot of, clients of ours that we see a trend where organizations necessarily take a little bit of a, it's an investment where they take someone who is less experienced, less, maybe less qualified, but exhibits, the traits such as, willingness to learn and ability to, excel in this particular field. And they take on that investment and they foster and they develop those resources internally within their organization. So that definitely makes sense. Speaking of which, when you interview your candidates, when you talk to potential, team members to join your groups, what do you look for in some of the responses when you talk to them? What is your outlook into that?
I would say just a handful. Of course, the notion that they have some level of technical fit to the role is important. But like we talked earlier, John, and you mentioned correctly, it's important to have people who can grow and learn and catch them young, as I was saying, right? So the four things that I would look for all the time, in addition to some sort of technical fit, is first, demonstrate a good attitude and people skills, because the attitude is something you cannot teach. Either you have it or you don't, right? And then, as you noted earlier, they've got to have the desire to learn, grow, and rise to challenges. They should possess a proactive approach to developing new skills. And so, if they're already have some certifications or pursuing certifications, this always helps me determine and identify candidates who already know that, especially in InfoSec, long-term learning and lifelong learning is something very important, right? And last but not the least, they've got to at least demonstrate that they have embraced continuous improvement with integrity and passion.
No, absolutely. And that makes sense, from a standpoint, especially when we talk about, highly, very niche IT talent, such as, information security. I'm pretty sure, they go through various levels of assessments, technical assessments before the interview with you. And for you to be able to make the interview almost, like an interpersonal conversation and to get to know the person more, kind of a lot closer as a person versus the technical skills, I think that also makes sense. And sounds like some of the strategies that really help you is to be able to open up that forum for the candidate to interview you as well, and ask the questions and to see who's at the top, who's the leadership of that particular division within the organization. I think that's also very important. So definitely, thank you for sharing that. When we talk about the current state of the industry or the industry that you guys are serving or even your particular domain, what are your thoughts on some of the most in-demand skill sets that are very scarce these days? Which ones are the most challenging to find for you?
There are a few. Let me take a breath here and think about it. So, going forward, I think the following skill sets are going to be hard to find and already are, as we talk about in a minute: identity and access management, security strategy and governance, cloud security, risk management. These are what I would call the strategic skill sets, right? And then the technical skill sets really are the application development, security, threat intelligence, incident response, and then, of course, an overarching one, which is data privacy and security. And that's a pretty long list, right? But I think these are really very central to help enterprises navigate and walk that tightrope between value protection and value creation. Now, for CSO Online, literally a quote I can remember is, "A cybersecurity labor crunch is to hit 3.5 million unfilled jobs by 2021." 3.5 million, right? So therefore, essentially, all these skills are hard to find at present. There's just not enough people, John.
Right, absolutely. No, I can definitely relate to that because, we live and breathe that on a daily basis with a lot of our clients. And, that's the biggest challenge when we talk about the very scarce talent. And a lot of, the listeners who, subscribe to Ivy Podcast are early stage career professionals also. And the questions that we get is, if you were to, give a recommendation of what area, a particular specialty field in IT to go into, information security usually is one of the top, along with, cloud and, the data. Those are the areas that are of extreme interest and very, very scarce these days for a lot of organizations. Aaron, from a standpoint of you must, stay up to date on a lot of the, the industry trends, a lot of the developments. You have to be, almost ahead of the curve to be able to predict certain, particular threats or particular, developments in this field. What are your sources of information? What are your sources for learning? What do you follow? What do you read? Whether that's, a Twitter profile or a particular blog that you subscribe to, share with us your sources of information.
Sure, John. So I do use LinkedIn primarily and Twitter also to share information with and learn from others. I also enlist in various peer groups like the Cloud Security Alliance. As I noted earlier, I'm on the board of the Cloud Security Alliance Detroit chapter. I attend seminars and conferences when possible on industry trends and technologies. I volunteer my time and speak on panels or talks like this to also share information. And it's interesting because even when I do that, I meet people and fellow thought leaders as well. And I read like crazy. I've got Google alerts for various topics, etc. And of course, I have my full day job, but using all these different channels, I try to engage directly with people, virtually or in person when we can, and just keep up to date to the extent I can. And one thing is, I take the notion of lifelong learning very seriously, right? So I've been a CISSP now for a few years, a Certified Information Security and Systems Professional by the ISC2. But just a few months ago, I actually went out and got an additional certification called the Certificate of Cloud Security Knowledge, or CCSK, by the Cloud Security Alliance as well, right? And I think it's just a balancing sort of the softer way of doing it, either through LinkedIn or through seminars. But also sometimes you just got to roll up the sleeves and take a deep dive into certifications as well, because I've been working with the cloud for many, many years, but I can tell you I learned so much studying for that certification, John. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was really, really great for me, right? So hope that helps.
Well, that's exciting, and definitely congrats on that achievement. I'm pretty sure that wasn't, that wasn't very easy. And you mentioned that you read a lot. You read like crazy. So share with us, what are you currently reading, and what is one book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
For the first time, I'm going to cheat a little. I will tell you that I have two favorite books, and these are not technical books, okay? So this is in the notion of people, process, and technology, really speaking about the people and process dimension. I talked a lot about change earlier, and it's sort of a setup for my first favorite book, and it's actually called Fearless Change, Patterns for Introducing New Ideas. It's by Linda Rising and Marilyn Manns. So this book illustrates many patterns or methods for implementing change in organizations or teams of all sizes, and it provides great advice on how to use them successfully to enact change. And like I mentioned earlier, right now with the fourth industrial revolution and the winds of change blowing, these are skills that are really important to have. They've also written a sequel called More Fearless Change as well. So I would say that's a companion pack. And the second favorite book that I have is The Story Factor, Inspiration, Influence, and Persuasion to the Art of Storytelling. And this one's by Annette Simmons. I think it came out in 2006, many years ago. But this seminal book inspires to use the art of storytelling to persuade, motivate, and inspire others across all aspects of life and work.
Oh, that's super exciting. And thanks for sharing that. And for our listeners, we'll make these titles of these books available in the episode notes. Aaron, I can't thank you enough for your time today. I know it was a very short but very insightful conversation for, you know, your Lent expertise to us today. I look forward to staying in touch with you, and perhaps we could do another episode in about a year or so and see how much have transpired and have changed. So much appreciated.
Thank you, John, for the opportunity. It's been an absolute pleasure. Please keep in touch.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.